Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to The Mentor, I'm Mark Boris. Bill Gramos from Homemaker Central, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you, Mark. Lovely to be here.
Founder and CEO. Tell me about Homemaker Central.
Oh, Homemaker Central is something that I'm really excited about. It's basically what we did is we created a digital version of a Homemaker Supercenter. Yeah, you know, the e-commerce place is a pretty busy place, and we wanted to bring bricks and mortar retailers and give them the opportunity to come together, create a bit of muscle, you know, as a collective, and take it to the online only, digital only sort of retailers and vendors and multi-category marketplaces. Where the point of difference is, I suppose, is that it's exclusively for bricks and mortar retailers.
Yeah.
There's a really good reason why you go into a shopping complex and they're all there.
Yeah.
And that critical mass creates a go-to destination.
Yeah.
Plenty to see, plenty to compare, browse, right? And we created that online with quality, like I said, bricks and mortar retailers, as opposed to online only guys.
But your background at one stage, you know, working in Paddy's Markets.
That's where it started.
Well, you had a market store. That's one of the very, very early marketplaces. And in fact, let me go back now. We never really started having proper shopping centres until the late 60s. I think the first one was in New South Wales, at least, was a place called Roselands, and then Bankstown Square. Those two sort of went alongside each other. That was the first example, I mean, of a proper marketplace. You go into a shopping centre.
That's right.
And it's not every shop, but most shops were there. And that was a great experience because I lived around that area and I remember going in there. But probably prior to that, in terms of food at least, the marketplace was the markets.
Yeah.
Paddy's Markets.
That's right. And in the old Chinatown, aren't the old, it's still there. Haymarket.
Now it's out of Flemington. But I used to think it was a great experience as a kid, and there was lots of characters there.
Oh, plenty of characters.
Lots of characters, lots of choice. What did you learn from your first and foremost, what did your experience in the Paddy's Markets days? Well, where did you work? What type of store was it?
Yeah, so the way it started for me was that I ended up at the age of about 13 and a half or thereabouts working for this guy who was a market trader selling men's clothes.
Right.
And my mum thought it was a great idea to go and get some real-world experience, right? So, I went to the markets working with this guy. His name was Frank. And, in fact, the first market I ever went to was in Pitt Street, Waterloo. And that was like a pop-up one on the street.
Right.
And you turn up on Saturday morning and you set up and everything else and they have the trestles there and tables.
Yeah, like those. Yeah, those sort of markets.
By 5 o'clock, it'd be packed up and gone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you had the other more established ones like Paddy's Fairfield, Penrith had one, Carrington had one, then the drive-in and they were all everywhere, right? But the big ones were obviously Paddy's and what have you. Did that for a few years with Frank and then I decided that, look, the markets are fantastic. The energy is unbelievable.
Well, you go there, as a shopper, you go there for the energy, by the way.
The Spruikers there and the runners in the crowd and everybody's thinking they're getting a bargain the whole time. The guy's putting their hand up, but the guy's working for them, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They get $20 out of you, right?
So, well, and you're going to get changed, and as you walk out, they grab the back of your jacket, and it always looked like it fitted you perfectly. You're looking in the mirror, and then they're holding the back of your jacket. That's good.
That was one of the first tricks that Frank taught me, right? Because you that was a clothes trading right thing. And anyway, it was a fantastic experience. It's raw. It's real grassroots trading.
Yeah, but there was no alternative either, by the way, for marketplaces. That was it. There wasn't shopping centres. They just started.
Look, by then, we're talking about the early 80s.
Oh, right? No,
early
80s.
There were shopping centres by then, right? What there wasn't was homemaker centres.
Right.
They came along in the early 90s.
Right.
So you'd have, you know, in that homemaker sort of game furnishings.
Norman Ross was around that.
Norman Ross was around and they had their stores, but they're all standalone, right? Yeah. So they're either on precincts like, for example, Parramatta Road at Auburn.
Yeah.
Famous for big, bulky, good sort of furniture retailers up and down the strip, but actual shopping complex, no.
Yeah.
And then they came along in the early 90s. So when we started and we launched Deco Rug in 93, even at that point, there wasn't a proper homemaker centre yet, right? And then they sort of kicked off about that time.
Deco Rug was your business?
Yeah.
Where was Deco Rug? Were you a retailer selling in, say, Harvey Norman or Norman Ross in those days? Or where did you?
Yeah, so one step back in terms of how it came about, from the markets, I actually, at the age of 17, I started – my dad was working as a salesman at a Manchester giftware store, and he had contacts with suppliers and things like that. And I said to him, see if you can get me some consignment stock. I don't want to keep working for Frank. I want to do my own thing. There's no reason why I can't trade at the markets on my own, right? So he came to me with a couple of options, and I decided on the rugs. I had a choice of going with phones, which were cordless phones at the time, which is something fantastic, or rugs. And, obviously I wanted to do the phones. It was new, it's exciting, it's technology, right? And, they were cordless, right? And he goes, no, you don't want to do that, my dad said. I said, why is that? He says, they don't work very well. You step 3 feet away from them and they cut out and people keep bringing them back. I said, well, I won't be doing that. That's how I ended up getting into the rug game, right? Just by that.
And what period is this?
Sliding moment thing. 83.
83. Rugs is freaking me out. It's not something a normal person would do because, I mean, how did you know about rugs?
Didn't know a thing. At the time, there was two products, Mark, right? Just two. One was a cotton, what we call decorator rugs, right?
Yep.
That was made on a machine loom that came out of Brazil. And the other one was the Greek Flaccati rug. That was the two products.
Flaccati,
right?
I remember those.
Okay. So they're the shaggy things, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I worked at Grace Brothers rug department. So.
Okay. Well, you're all over
it. But in the
70s.
Right.
Yep.
In the 70s.
It hadn't changed much.
Well, in the 70s, that's the Flaccati was very, very popular.
Huge.
Which was like a long, maybe
shaggy.
Long goat's hair or something. I don't know what it was. But the soft undercover, it wasn't hard. That's right. Wasn't woven.
Yeah. It was wool all through. There's no backing.
Yeah. It was just like a soft cottony thing at the back.
Yeah.
And it used to slip on the floor all the time.
Of course.
Yeah. I remember the Flaccatis. Yeah. They still sell Flaccati, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Flaccati, yeah. And I remember those well. I remember those. And but we also sold at Grace Brothers like Persian rugs, and we sold but no one ever bought them. And we also sold like wool rugs, like a traditional looking wool.
Yeah, woven. Again,
something
woven.
Out of England, and they're expensive, I seem to recall.
They weren't, as were the Persian rugs and things like that.
Yeah.
People didn't have a choice back then. You're either really well off and you could afford these, these works of art. That's what they were. Right? And then the machine made stuff started coming along just when I started, hence those, cotton ones out of Brazil.
And which ones did you sell?
Just those two. Just
the Flaccati?
Yep, and those cotton ones, which were affordable, right?
Yeah.
There were three designs and four colours. That was it, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Now it's endless, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they've advanced with production technology, and it's fantastic, right?
So were you selling the Deco rugs at the market?
No, so what we – yeah, that's right. So when I went on my own, I didn't go with the phones. I went with the rugs instead, simply because there was two suppliers who wanted to give me consignment stock, and the idea was finish school on Friday – drive the car down there, load it up, go to the markets on the weekend, turn up Monday morning before school, unload, divvy up and come back next week.
Consignment stock means you didn't buy it. You sold it for them at a markup or at the price they wanted, and they paid you a fee. How did that work?
They booked the product at whatever the wholesale price was.
Yeah.
And whatever I sold it for, I made the profit on it. I just didn't have to physically pay for the stock up front.
Yeah, you didn't have to buy it.
That's right.
You just bought it effectively when you sold it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So if I come in to buy one, but at the end of the day you sold nothing.
Just return the stock.
They get all the stock back.
That's right.
And you owe them nothing.
That's right.
All you had to do was invest in this was your own time.
That's right.
Potentially there's some risk there and you had to pay for the store.
That's right.
Or the rental of the space.
That's right.
Wherever you were.
Yep. Yeah. Spot on right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And how old were you?
I hadn't turned 17 yet when I turned up to the Marcus. I didn't even have a driver's license actually.
Yeah.
Had a friend drive me. The first day.
Yeah.
And he didn't like the early morning start, right? We kicked off at 4:30 in the morning so you can queue up and get your stall and everything else. And the next week I had to drive myself.
So you started, how many rugs did you kick off with?
Whatever I could fit into the 67 Valiant.
Yeah, so probably not many. And probably half a dozen or a dozen or something.
Basically took out the back seat and loaded up whatever we could.
So your first day,
your
first weekend, what was that like?
Even though I'd worked at the Marcus for 2 or 3 years before that, like with Frank, right, turning up on your own, you instantly go, okay, I'm familiar with this place, I know this place, right? But doing it on your own, you're shit scared. I'm talking to the owners of the markets, the guys who give you the stores for the first time directly, right? And the idea is get a good store, get one, number one, get a good one. So
good position then.
That's right, absolutely. And then rush in, unload, set up, get the car out, trade all day.
How'd you go there, first day?
Oh, rubbish. Didn't do a thing.
Didn't sell one.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
At what point did this start to pay a few dividends to a young 17-year-old Bill?
Mate, within 2 months, 2 to 3 months, right, from memory, I was making more money than my dad was.
Right. So you were selling quite a few of these.
Yeah. At the market, you learn real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick, right?
Or you die.
Yeah, that's it.
What did Bill become? Like a sprue? Did he start, hey, get it?
Did all that, ticketing, negotiate, do deals, whatever.
Scream.
Whatever you had to do.
Did you trip over as a war pass? I mean,
short of that.
Short of that. But I mean, you had to get their attention. So
absolutely.
I mean, today you get their attention through Instagram or social media, but how did you get their attention? Like, what did you? Do you remember any little things?
Mate, I learned something and we repeated it all the way through, right? And it's motion creates emotion.
Right.
But, you've got a stall and there's no barrier, right? It's literally a line drawn on the ground, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And outside of that, there are hundreds of people walking past. And inside of that is your stall and nobody's there, right? So, you've got to get them in there. You've got to get their attention. So what we used to do is we'd pretend we're selling something. We'd pretend we'd made a big sale. We'd make commotion. We'd make some noise, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I got that from the Spruikers, who used to be absolute salespeople through and through and showmen, right? And it was all about engagement. And that's where you learn those lessons and you learn. So we'd get people's attention. And you'd look at the time and you're going, okay, this is not going well today so far, right? You get their attention. All of a sudden, you got somebody in, somebody follows them in, and you'd be amazed. Once you get a little busy, you get very busy.
Right.
Once you're quiet, people look at it and they go, well, nobody's shopping here. Why aren't they shopping here? It's either too expensive or the stuff's rubbish or it's no good or whatever. So, if you don't have a buzz and a bit of motion, you can't hook them in.
See, that's the start. That's the same as how we operate on social media today anyway. It's all about engagement.
Absolutely.
And you've got to make some noise. And
the principles are the same. The
principles are the same, just the platforms are different.
Yeah.
So let's say you got a bit of motion and you got a bit, in other words, you made a bit of movement inside the shop or the stall and you were getting people coming through. Obviously, you're doing quite well after a few months' time. But how did you work out whether or not you had the right product? I mean, and at what point do you start to expand your product line? Where do you put pressure on your consignor or the person you got your stuff from? Hey, give me some new stuff. I need something different.
Oh, those conversations happened all the time. But in this particular game, there wasn't that much. Yeah. Basically, as product came on the market, because they were just developing synthetic yarns and then production mills and things like this, and they could produce all sorts of things, then the product basically was coming online progressively, right? So the more things that came online, the more you could offer, right? And then it just exploded at some point with synthetic yarns and things like that.
Did you stay in the markets for long?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually started the markets in 83, launched Deco Rug in 93. In between that time, we basically picked up a number of markets with my dad and one of my brothers was helping out as well and got involved and then heavily involved, throughout the market sort of operations. So we had markets for a while. And we also then went and opened a couple of shops. The first one of them was in Bexley North, and the other one that I opened myself was in actually on Oxford Street in Bondi Junction. And they were there to support the markets, really, because if we wanted to sell big ticket items, customers wanted to know that, you know, if you don't turn up next week and the stuff's no good, what am I going to do? But if you've got a store, get them a lot of comfort, and it immediately increased our
credibility.
Sales. Yeah, absolutely. So we did that, and then with basically high street stores like that, right? We had a few like that. We only ever had three or four at a time. But they had a very, very small lifespan in the sense that, you know, the demographic was very, very small. People would go to that shopping strip, like at Bondi Junction, for example. It was the locals. It wasn't the old days with a huge Westfield there. It was just the locals going there doing the shopping. And once they bought an item like a rug, for example, that market sort of is diminishing over time because the lifespan of the product, simply, right?
Yeah.
You need to cast your net a lot broader than that, right? So that brought about Decorug, which we launched, like I said, in 1993, and that was more Main Road. The first one was in Parramatta Road at Five Dock, and then Homemaker Centres came on board.
And you went into Homemaker Centres?
Yeah.
It's like you were the one out at Surrey Hills, no, Surrey Hills.
Moore Park.
Yeah.
We're at Moore Park for quite a number of years. We're at Caringbah, still are to this day. There's a Decorug store there. We were one of the first ones in there, in fact, on the day that it opened. I remember that, you know, the place was a ghost town. And now it's, you know, I mean, Homemaker Centres are fantastic. It's got everything for the home. Customers love the environment. The good thing about that sort of sector is that customers really invested in their homes, right? And they love styling, decorating. It's almost like a hobby.
It's definitely an Australian thing.
Yeah, when you create that environment for them where they can browse and compare and shop and everything else, that's Homemaker Centres.
Right? It's funny. I remember he's dead now, but passed away many years ago. But old Sid Laundish set up the Homemaker Centre in Moore Park.
That's right. And that wasn't even a proper Homemaker Centre at the time. I think it had some fashion in it.
Yeah, it had bits and pieces in it.
Yeah, that was the first one, right?
And it was a big deal. Huge. I remember when because I remember he borrowed a lot of money for it, and there was a lot of talk around town that this is not going to work. Sid was a bit of a pioneer in terms of developments, retail developments. You know, he really was a pioneer, Sid. And I remember thinking about, is this going to work? Because you're right, it just wasn't just a Homemaker Centre. It had other bits and pieces in there because it's hardly a tenant, so you got to take whatever you can get at that time.
Yeah. It was ahead of its time, 100%.
It was totally ahead of its time. Right. It was one of the first, but now it's just Homemaker.
Yeah.
And you've got big brands there like
huge.
You guys, Freedom, Harvey Norman, Bing Lee, they're all there. Everybody's there. Yep. So what is the advantage of today, if you go back and look at it, what is the advantage of just Homemaker vendors in a Homemaker Centre? Why do people flock to them? What do you reckon is the psychology?
They're focused on the home. Everything you want, everything you need for the home, right? And like I said, that house-proud customer, house-proud consumer is, you know, really invested in their home. And the fact that they can go to one location and see everything, but the important thing is that they can compare and browse and make a informed decision. Right. So let's say, for example, you want to buy a bed, right? You go to a place where there's three or four retailers because how many times do you buy a bed in your lifetime? You don't know much about them. You can hear all the advertising you like, right? But at some point, if you can, as you narrow down your selection process, if you can browse and compare and understand value for money, it makes your decision making much easier, right?
You can touch it too. Like you can probably lay in it. I think if we just pick Sid's old joint, there are two or three bed companies there. Freedom's one of them, but like you can go.
They're all there. Beds and Dreams, for example, is also on our platform at homemakercentral.com. Yeah, they're in all the Homemaker Centres as well.
I just want to go back a step because I understand people want to go to one place. I get that. They can make comparisons, and I can understand they want to check this price against that price. They'd like to feel like they've made a few comparisons before they make the big decisions about like a bed's not cheap.
Yeah,
you know, and as you say, you might only buy one every 15, 20 years, so it's not a thing you do all the time. But why? I'd like to just go back one step. Why are we? And does this happen in other countries? To your knowledge, why are we so mad about making our home a certain way? I mean, what is it that makes us so interested in this shit?
Like, it's your haven, Mark. That's where you live. That's where your family is.
Why that? Why us? Why, I mean, is it the same anywhere else in the world? Or is there any studies on this? I mean, why psychologically do you think it's so important to us?
I don't know that it's exclusive. Yeah, you know, we're anything special in that regard, right? I think that it goes much broader than that. I think that we just love our haven. It's your family. It's your safe place. How you style it and how you decorate it needs to be comfortable. It's a reflection of who you are. We're just invested in our living space, in our home. It's.
I mean, do you think that it's a security thing for us? I mean, do you think it's about us showing off to people who might visit us, our families, or let's say all the migrants come here? You know, we're pretty much a migrant country.
Yeah,
pretty much. In fact, we are a migrant country.
Of course, yeah.
For a couple hundred years. Is it about us feeling a bit insecure and as migrants, largely turning up here as either convicts or migrants without any qualifications, doing our best to reestablish ourselves from wherever it is we left? And you're certainly being Gramos, so I'd say someone's left Greece and they've come here at a certain point, probably with nothing, and they had to reestablish themselves.
That's
no different to the Asian people coming here today or the South Africans who came here in the 90s and 2000s, reestablishing themselves. And we all felt like we had something to prove and we want to make it as nice as possible. I mean, because it's important.
Yeah, look, having something to prove and all that, you know, that's arguable depending on the personality and the character and everything else, right? I think there is for sure a sense of pride. I think that a lot of the buying decisions, and this goes back to sales psychology, which we did a whole, we do it in the Decorug days, did a lot of training around that and sales strategy and things like that. We had a whole program for it, right? But it comes back to pride and those buying decisions that we make. And it doesn't just end in the home, right? What you wear,
car,
what you drive, right? It's a reflection of who you are. It's a reflection of how you want to, of who you are and
but it's
how
about people us, see you. But Bill, it's about, obviously I'm not a psychologist, but I'd just love to get your opinion. Is it about who we are for ourselves, in other words, how I feel, or is it who we are for others?
I think subconsciously it's a bit of both, because, if somebody, let's say you just did something at home, whether it's new furniture or you did some landscape or whatever you did, right? And you've got some close friends that come and see you and you visit and you're in each other's house and visiting and, right? Once you buy something new and you show it off to them, and you don't, I'm not saying, you do a whole song and dance and show it off to them, but they come in and see it. It wasn't there last week, it's there this week, right? And they say to you, oh, Mark, I love your new lounge, right? I love what you've done with the living room. It's great. You feel good about that, yeah?
Because I've often wondered about this, do we do it for ourselves? Is it something, do we really care?
Well, it goes back to that thing about if nobody could see you driving, would you go and buy a Porsche, right? It's,
Well, because it's a great bit of machinery, I would.
Oh, well,
Porsche. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I've often wondered about, from my point of view, and it's just a survey one, but there is a certain feel that I get it can be, let's say I went and decorated a house today with stuff that represented an era in my life, say the 60s.
Yeah.
So I made sure I had a record player.
Yeah.
And I had a pair of, Audio Technica record player and Audio Technica.
Yeah, the whole thing, what they used to call them, pickup or something.
Yeah, and the same with the little box speakers. Yeah. And I just wanted to represent an era for myself.
Sure.
I wouldn't care what anyone else thought. I mean, it was something I just wanted to do because I love that era. And I want to buy records, for example, to put on the stereo system that fitted in with the lounge that reflected that era, because those records reminded me of what my mum used to play, for example.
Yeah, gives you a bit of comfort.
I know. Cool. It's just a nice feeling.
Sure.
Or is it, do you think, because that's the pride for me.
Yep.
I'm proud of I did this and I achieved this outcome. Or do you think it's more – what's more prevalent, though, is people feel pride because when they invite someone to their house, someone maybe compliment them?
I don't think that people consciously make those decisions. We're not that showy, right, generally, right? But you do take the compliment and you feel good about your choices because, if we're friends and your opinion matters to me and, you go, oh, mate, love your new car or you love your new lounge or you love – right? I'm going to feel good about that. It's much better than saying, "Oh, Bill, what were you thinking, man? This is shit."
Yeah, yeah.
Right, what's,
yeah. Right. What's that Velvet Lounge and that right, hush pile? Yeah. What are they calling the hush piles? What were they? The big carpets that used to have in the 60s.
Oh, the plush pile.
Plush pile carpet. Yeah, hell are you doing there, Mark? But yeah, it's funny because I think if someone walked into my house on that example I just gave you and they immediately recognized it as a 60s look.
Yeah.
That would be good for me. I would like that because I say, I got it right. Like they got it. Yeah. Not many people would because I mean people remember the 60s. But, you know, like if they walked in and saw that and they said, that's a 60s
and you nailed the look and they go, this is so cool.
You're probably right. I would think that's good. Because so, I'm always interested in the psychology of people like you in relation to, say, for example, Deco Rug, the psychology of how you stock, how you present yourself. You know, and these days people do that on Instagram and stuff like that. But, I mean, back in those days you had to have your salespeople understanding the psychology of the people who walk into the shop and what they want to get out of it.
That's a really big thing, right? And it goes to, you know, who are you as a business? What are your values, right? And getting people who understand your values and your goals and your objectives and your principles and aligning with that, right?
So would you pick their values?
We got to pick the people. We employ people basically based on their attitude.
Would you, in terms of determining your values, Bill, do you pick the values of the consumer? So you adopt their values and then you say, these are our values to your staff, or do you go out and establish your own set of values and then hopefully consumers will align with that?
If we're values in the sense of how you do business or what you're doing?
Yeah, right? What are you doing?
Okay, so we happen to be in the floor covering game, right? We weren't rug traders. We were selling rugs physically. That was the product, but that's just a means to an end, right? What we were doing is helping customers decorate and furnish their home.
And feel good.
Right. So once you relate to that and that becomes fundamental to your values as a business and I want to put a smile on your face when you come into my store and that's my sole sort of driver and then the product itself, we'll find something that you like. And if we don't, I hope that I've done enough to sell you on me, right, and at my business that, you know, 6 months' time or 12 months' time or you tell your friends or whatever the case is, right, come back and that's how you build, you know, a good reputation and build your business. So, we used to say if you can't sell product today, make sure you sell yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Once a customer comes into contact with us, whether they buy or whether they don't, and this is back in the Decorug days, right, and those values sort of stay true all the way through anyway, they should be sold on you. And they should be able to tell their friends. And the idea is we were talking about before people coming into your home and saying something nice about you, right? In the training workshops, and I've run hundreds and hundreds of them, right? Personally, proper sales workshop training things, right? We'd say for everything that you sell, it ends up typically in somebody's living area. People who come to visit that customer of yours, they typically, especially the close four or five friends, they typically see that. And they're going to comment. And who's going to comment? Our female demographic is typically the buyer. And, they buy something new, they talk about it, all that sort of stuff, right? In that conversation, if you've done well enough and you've put the customer first, they're going to talk about you too.
I bought this at Deco Rug.
Yeah, and from Bill, from Mark, right? You should go and see him. How about you do this for your, that rumpus room that you've got, and we'll go there on the weekend. That's the best outcome.
Yeah.
Go with you. I'll introduce you to Mark. That is the desired result that we're chasing all the time, right? When it comes to customer satisfaction.
That's best practice.
Absolutely, right? And that's the sort of stuff that we focus on. So it was not about the product as much as what the product will do for that and the relationship that you build through that. So it's that customer sort of relationship and you relating to that customer and going back to your values is about making sure that I put a smile on your face all the way through with regard to not only interaction, but the care that I put into you getting it right.
Again, I want to migrate this now, Bill, from Deco Rug, that experience, and because we migrated from your experience in the markets to Deco Rug the stores. Now from Deco Rug the stores, I want to migrate that to Homemaker Central, but I'm going to go to the break, I'm going to come straight back, and we're going to start talking about Homemaker Central. I want to know what the thesis is behind that.
Hold up. when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm back here with Bill Gramos, and we're talking about the thesis or the proposition behind Homemaker Central. Now, Bill's already told us it's a digital environment. It's an online marketplace. I get all that. He invites vendors to get onto the website, and of course, he then markets to consumers, and Bill does everything on the in between. But what is the thesis around why it should be successful? So, why should Homemaker Central be successful? What is your thesis on that?
The whole idea of Homemaker Central was to create an online digital shopping center, right? So, you know, we commonly call them marketplaces, but basically we function like a shopping center. So we have retailers who've got a physical store presence, so it's exclusively for bricks and mortar retailers, like I mentioned earlier.
Give me a couple of examples of those.
Barbecues Galore, Beds and Dreams, Shack Furniture, Osman Outdoor, right? We've got 17 of them on at the moment. Right.
So Barbecues Galore, good example. I mean, yep. Place I've been to physically.
Yeah.
They have their own website.
That's right.
Yeah, but they, but Barbecues Galore, generally speaking, are sitting in Homemaker shopping centres.
Correct.
Or things like that. And if I'm going to go see one, I normally have to go there, physically go there. But you all got them on your digital environment.
Yeah.
Into your digital shopping centre, so to speak.
Sure.
Okay, and why would I go there?
Okay, so going back to, we mentioned shopping centres earlier, right? So you might be going into that shopping centre specifically to see Barbecues Galore today.
Yep.
Because you want a barbecue, for example, right? But walking through that mall, walking through that centre, you might get dragged in left and right, you know, and yeah, you're attracted to something, or there's something that you need. You might have been a chair that you found, yep, for your office. It could be something, you know, just something as simple as cushions, or it could be anything to do for the home. They're all there. And all you've got to do is walk into that store and have a look as soon as something grabs your attention, right? You'll still get the barbecue. That's why you're there today. But you might walk out with a lot more, right? So that sort of dynamic that's created in those shopping, physical shopping centers, is what we've created online. So it's, yes, you have the barbecues there and the outdoor furniture there. But the way Homemaker Central navigates and the way that it's set up is that you can shop by retailer. So each retailer has their own store on the platform, or you can shop in the integrated categories, which you shop by product, you shop by room. So let's say, for example, you're shopping for your living room, right? It might be a sofa that you're looking for, but you'll also see the wall art, the rug, the lamp, the coffee table, and everything that you would possibly fit into a living room. And we create design boards around that as well. You can create your own design boards or professionally curated ones, which we commission and have on.
What's a design board?
It's basically a professional stylist who puts together the whole look, everything you need for that room.
Okay, so I go to your website.
Yep.
How do I get one of these design boards? Tell me how that works.
Oh, basically, it's you'll see the navigation tab at the top, and you basically click on that, and they're all themed. Like, for example, you might have a bohemian themed bedroom, right?
Yep.
Or a Hampton style living room, right?
Yep.
So our professional, you know, our stylists have put together
packages.
Yeah, everything you need. It's basically their idea of what makes a perfect, you know, Hampton style.
Like a typical type.
Yeah,
of,
yeah.
Or, yeah.
And you could take things out, but, you know, you can basically copy that whole design board to your design board. Everything is shoppable. You can add things in, take them out, and they're all from different vendors, right? Again, going back to the physical sort of experience where you can buy the lounge from Shack, you can buy from Shack Furniture, you can buy the rug from Decarug, for example, or Najaf Rugs, who's one of our vendors with some beautiful, Persian rugs we were talking about earlier. You've got lamps, you've got, you know, from different vendors, you've got anything you think of, coffee tables, right, from various vendors, and you check out all in one.
Right. So you just buy things to the checkout, put them to the checkout?
Put them in your cart and you can check out all in one, and then basically the orders go to each vendor and they fulfill.
Yeah.
If you're shopping specifically for barbecues, then going back to your example, and you go online and you go, okay, barbecues and barbecues galore come up, it's only barbecues you're going to see. You're not going to see anything else to do with some outdoor furniture perhaps and what have you, but you're not going to see anything else around that, in and around that. It's in isolation. And that's where, by creating Homemaker Central, the idea was give these retailers some muscle and a leg up in terms of creating a powerful collective of brands that people know and trust, right, in the one online destination. Create that broad product category spectrum where they can see everything for the home in the one location. This is why some of the big multi-category marketplaces are doing so well and keep getting market share, taking market share away from the physical retailers, because there's so much product on there. And that audience, that customer base is so invested in their home that they're always looking for something, you know, for this room or the bedroom or the lounge room or the outdoor, whatever it is, there's always something, whether it's, you know, stuff in your kitchen, whatever it is. So they really get involved in that shopping experience, right? And that browsing experience. An isolated specialist retailer who just sells outdoor or, you know, floor coverings or bedroom furniture or bedding or whatever the case may be, they are a long way down that sort of process, that sales path where you're specifically looking for that. You go in and get out and what have you, right? But the broader experience for that customer is much more appreciated in that they can see all sorts of things. What's new, there's tips, style blogs and all sorts of stuff that they can really get involved with.
Do you run the risk that people come to your website to browse and check everything out, and then, okay, I found this is the barbecue I want, or this is the lounge I want, or this is the rug I want, and I know I'm going to go straight to the store and buy it.
And they can go directly,
Or do they run the risk, people go into their store, lay all over the bed, this bed's the one I want, I go to Bill's, I go to the marketplace.
Homemaker Central.
And I know the one I want, but I'm going to find the one I want at the right price.
Yeah.
Which one do you think is correct?
Here's the thing, right? If a customer goes into a store and they're not ready to make a buying decision yet, right? They're still browsing and looking. If they're going to end up online, they may as well end up in a shopping environment where they can show their partner or whatever the case may be what the different options are and do that in the convenience of one destination. We also, further to that, we also offer incentives such as rewards points. We've got a rewards points program.
Right.
So customers earn rewards points on everything that they purchase and they can spend it on any retailer, right, with any retailer on the platform, which sort of, helps that engagement as well as all those other soft sort of things like design boards and everything else, right?
But these are the incentives to stay on the website and to go back to the website.
Yeah, but the important thing to remember is that this is just another touch point for these retailers, putting them in front of a qualified audience. It's not instead of, it's not in place of, it's as well as.
As well as. So your job is to get an audience.
Yeah, absolutely, and promote our retailers.
Okay, so how do you do that? So Homemaker Central, how does it build an audience for your vendors, your retailers?
Yeah, typically through marketing is the short answer, right? Marketing, advertising, promotion, and customer engagement. And we need to continually do things for customers that they're going to find value in.
Digital? I mean, obviously
The rewards points being one.
Yeah, but how do you tell people about that? How do you build awareness? I mean, that's a good thing, but what's your awareness program? Unless they go to your website, do you use Instagram, which goes straight to the website?
So digital marketing, our marketing, we actually launched in November, only started marketing.
Oh, last year?
Just gone live, right, essentially. We only started marketing in late Jan, and that was a little bit hit and miss with the digital marketing that we were doing. And we've gone sort of a little bit backwards in terms of old school, back grassroots stuff, and we've basically have a mainstream media coming up. In fact, I just reviewed the TV commercial just before I left the office this morning, and it looks awesome. And I'm really impressed with what the guys have done there. So jingle, I make a central jingle. Once you hear it, you won't forget it, I'll tell you, right? TV advertising, radio advertising, and then as well as all your digital, right?
So, because TV still works, especially for this sort of stuff.
And good for branding and credibility.
Yeah, totally. Right? I mean, like, you're fair income.
We initially, and this is where I said, we started marketing in Jan, and it was a bit hit and miss. Why? Because it was just digital. Because everybody kept saying digital, and me sort of thinking.
You do mainstream.
Yeah, sometimes you think you're out of touch, Mark, right? So you're listening to all these geniuses and experts, and they're telling you, do this, and you go, mate.
They all work, but if you want to get a brand out there.
Yeah.
As a destination.
Yeah.
TV is still the most powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
It's also most expensive too.
Yeah. It's got to be part of the mix. It has to be part of the mix. But in terms of getting customers, it's marketing in its entirety, and it's about good engagement on platform once they're there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is through the incentives, through the whole experience and the different customer engagement issues that we have. One of them that we're really proud of, actually, and it's been really well received, is that we've got a digital magazine that comes out every quarter. It's called HM Central Life e-magazine. And we've got articles in there promoting some of the vendors and doing some backstories. We've got wellness articles in there. The latest winter edition has about, staying fit and healthy and well through winter. It's got some recipes and cooking. It's really well put together. And customers are loving that as well. So it's as well, it's a shopping, yes, but it's also the engagement experience and that community that we're building around it.
I feel like this could have been a COVID project. I feel as though this is something that could have been had its genesis during COVID.
It did to a point, right? It did to a point, but
you always were going to do it anyway, were you?
Yeah. It was always about why are we as a specialist retailer, for example, and I was still with Decorac at the time, right? And you're going, when people go searching for a particular item, they've got to be very specific in order for me to get noticed. Why can't we create an environment like we do in a shopping center? Do you think every time Decorac make a sale in a homemaker center, it's because the customer went there specifically for them? If that was the case, they wouldn't be there. They'd be paying top-notch rents.
Yeah, that's it. Right? Yeah, because you're paying lower rent.
Yeah, it's picking up.
Because they're marketing for you.
Well, it's picking up the impulse buyer you might have been number four, number five, number six on their list. They didn't leave home today to come and see you. Maybe they left home to come and buy a TV, right? And then they go, love it.
So there's a sale on. Let's go in. Have a look.
Yeah, and that's homemakercentral.com.au. In its conceptual, as a concept, that's where that comes from.
So, given you probably took a year or two to get this.
Yeah,
there's a lot of build in there, a lot of IT build in these things.
Yeah,
big digital stack. Retail was off the Richter scale in terms of the COVID period.
When it reopened online
and then reopening as well.
Sure.
Obviously, we had a big inflation now because people just went and spent too much money. I mean, to retail especially. Now we've got our, Reserve Bank governor hammering the crap out of the country. And I guess a lot of these things are discretionary spends.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where are you seeing things? Is it being affected by the current economic state, especially cost of living having gone up so much as well?
Yeah, look, the cost of living is through the roof. Obviously, you mentioned the RBA in the interest rate. I mean, that's off the scale. Does it affect
business?
Absolutely.
Do you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk to retailers. I talk to retailers directly all the time, right? They're all feeling it.
Yep.
Right. And it's they're all feeling it in a significant way.
Where do you think it's going to land? Where do you reckon it's going to end up?
Mate, I lived through the recession of the 80s, 90s that we had and all that sort of stuff. And and you get through these cycles. We haven't had one for a long time.
Yep.
Right. But it's going to be tough. There's no question about that. And I think that's, again, where Homemaker Central can support and help retailers by creating another touch point for customers.
Yep.
But aside from that, in terms of economically and a business perspective, if the banks keep doing what they're doing, like if the RBA keeps doing what it's doing and indications are that they're going to go a few more times, I mean, I can't believe that they've gone that many, right? It's just nuts.
So you're getting feedback that people are doing it tough.
Absolutely. Yeah. All retail.
But the Reserve Bank's responding to inflation, but inflation's a combination of goods and services. Yours is goods as opposed to services.
Yeah, I don't know so much that our retailers, for example, or any retailer for that matter, is banging up prices because inflation's gone up. It's a result of costs
gone up,
right? Yeah. So whether that was transport, whether transport went through the roof, the import shipping went off the roof, went nuts in post-COVID, right? Yep. So that was a factor that affected pricing, right? And there are other factors as well all the time. But I don't know. The key factors now, and we call it cost of living, is not the result of a retailer banging up prices. It's a result of the power going up.
Yeah. It's services. Basket of goods and services, the things that are going at the moment are the services. They're not products. So we're experiencing, you know, rents going up.
Yeah.
Restaurant going up. That's considered a service, not considered a good. Aviation, like flying, holidays.
Sure.
All cost hotels all gone up. You know, gas prices, all those sort of services.
Yeah. You mentioned rents, right? A lot of these leases that retailers have, and I've had you know, heaps of, you know, over the years, right? We had to, you know, 30 plus stores at, you know, at one stage. And if your lease is fixed at CPI or sometimes CPI plus one or whatever the case is, right? Well, guess what the next increase is going to be? Hmm. You know, this is a 12-monthly review, right? Well, you know, it's going to smash them.
8% increase is a lot.
Smash them on the rent.
Yeah.
Compounding.
Yeah.
Right, and it'll go again the following year.
Yeah.
Right, these are the things that are hurting businesses, and then in addition to that, the on a household level, right, when your mortgage has gone up, and we talk about a third, for example, is mortgage holders, right, and a third are renters. Mm. What do you think's going to happen to the renters if the mortgages are gone up?
The rent is going to go up too, well, which is what's happening.
Right, obviously, right, which is exactly so. 2/3 are going to be under the pump, right?
Yep.
They're going to have less to spend.
Yep.
The power's gone up, right? Fuel's gone up. Yeah, it's going to impact on their retail spending, which is exactly, you know, what's been designed.
So when you guys work out the cycle, what are you thinking? How long do you going to have to hold fast?
Mate, you'd be better, you're better
across what do you guys see? You're the face, you're the cold face. I mean, we have our theoretical, quantitative analytical sort of analysis, but you're at the cold face. I mean, how long do you think that people can last before, after which, you know, everything just falls apart and the Reserve Bank has to start dropping interest rates? What are you feeling and what are you thinking?
Look, consumer spending, or what they call consumer confidence, is obviously taking a hit at the moment, and it's simply because the money's not there, right? People are doing it tough, right? I think that – I don't know how long it's going to last, Mark. There's no way of knowing. It depends on how long the RBA keeps putting pressure on and how long we keep down this path of higher costs and utility costs and things like that, right? These are all factors that affect the household. So if the household's doing it tough, discretionary stuff that you mentioned before, discretionary items are going to be just that, right? People are going to
shelve them,
pull back, right, and say, "Well, wait, right? How long it lasts? I have no idea. Hopefully, not too long, right? From a retailer's perspective, there's always going to be customers out there. You got to turn up every day and smile and make their day, right? The biggest thing that I've seen, even in good times, is and it's even more important now as the pie gets smaller, it's customer engagement, right? How many times have you gone into a store? Maybe not you, because you're obviously well-known, but for me—
I go to stores,
sure, but no, I'm saying in terms of people's reaction, right? You go into a store and they ignore you.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing something apparently more important than servicing a customer.
I still get ignored, don't worry about that. Right. And I get annoyed too.
So,
Not because
you're a customer.
Me. Here to buy something.
Yeah, okay. So you go in there and within a few seconds, your instincts tell you whether you're buying there or not, or whether you're spending time there or not, right? And we keep telling sales people, right, on the shop floor, right, before you can sell, you need to buy time.
Yeah.
How do you buy time? Engage.
Yeah.
Look the customer in the eye. Be happy with the fact that they're there, right? You have to jump all over them, but acknowledge.
And don't go and ask them, how's your day?
No.
Because I'm not going to tell you. with their business, how's your day been?
Hey, my favorite is they go, hi, how are you today? Can I help you? Right? Two questions in one. Don't want the answer to either of them, right?
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
It's like, my God, like it kills me.
Yeah. So, brain dead stuff, right?
Bill, we're running out of time. So I just want to ask you, where are you up to? Are you guys raising money now? Where in your journey, where are you guys at now?
Yeah, so we launched, like I said, in November. We had a angel come on board in October last year.
Yep, angel investor, yep.
Yeah, with a decent size check. It was great. And now we need to scale and do the marketing. You said, how do you get people there? Eyeballs, right? You need to generate traffic. Yep. And we need to improve our, always seeking to improve our customer engagement and provide more value and that sort of
thing. So you guys are on the marketplace now, like going and talking to investors?
Yeah, started.
Yep.
I just started. It's obviously not a great time to be doing it.
Because there's not much liquidity around. There's not a lot of checks around at the moment.
No, I'm sure there isn't. And, you know, we've touched base with a number of, and I'm a novice in this area, right? I'm a retailer through and through. I understand that game really well. This fund cap raising stuff is, you know.
And what do you do, engage with someone to do it for you?
No, we're, obviously always talking to people and everything else. Haven't engaged somebody specifically.
Yep.
Trying to navigate our way through that and find what the best sort of channel is. Equity crowdfunding is one option. That we're thinking about as well, talking to a number of different firms. Some of them, it fits within their mandate. Some of them, it doesn't. Some of them like it. Some of them don't. It depends on what the appetite is.
It depends on how much money you're raising too, right? Because a lot of times if you're not raising enough, they don't want to handle it.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's how much is too much and how much is not enough?
Well, it's easier to raise $10 million than it is to raise $2 million.
You should be asking for more.
That's what they say. Well, that's generally because the reason for that is because they don't want to spend the time on two because they're going to get somewhere between 6% and 10% fee. They take the view that they're going to spend just as much time to raise $10 million. And a 6% to 10% fee on 10 is a lot more than 6% to 10% on 2 million.
Yeah,
for simple maths.
Yeah.
So, a lot of times they don't do the smaller deals, the 2 million to 3 million deals. In fact, a lot of them have a $5 million cutoff before they'll even go and try and get checks for you.
Yeah.
And it's a hard time of liquidity right now.
For sure.
The question is, the question I think is, do you say, okay, just lock down things? I'll just lock down things and wait for things to turn around. And when wait for liquidity to come back in the market, your market. I'm not talking about consumers. I'm talking about funders, investors. Yep. Or do you just say no? I'm going to be a standard here. I'm just going to keep plodding along, trying to get investors. That's an interesting question. I never known the right answer to that one. Whether or not you just close up shop. I don't mean stop your business. I just mean stop trying to raise money.
Yeah.
Or do you continue to raise money and just annoy the shit out of people and just keep knocking on doors and hopefully at some stage you'll nail the right person. What do you think you're going to do? What do you guys think?
I think we'll keep pursuing it because it's important for the business to get scale.
Yep.
I think that's the best thing for us, the best thing for our vendors and allow us to, number one, bring on more vendors as well, increase our marketing, increase our product, if you like, or our platform through consumer, better engagement and everything else, even though it's pretty good. You're always going to tweak and make improvements to it.
Well, you do TV advertising for a start, like that.
Yeah. So, mate, I'm not one for taking a backward step. I've been through the ringer in the past with businesses and the highs and the lows and the good and the bad and everything else, mate. You just keep going and swinging for the fences. So,
just one foot after the other.
Yeah, keep swinging for the fences. We've got a good product that adds value for our vendors and our retailers. It adds value for customers in terms of experience and the whole sort of. Shopping, extra discounts and all the bits and pieces that customers appreciate.
And Bill, is there a proxy anywhere out there in the world that you guys are equivalent to or trying to emulate?
No, we're the first in Australia.
And anywhere else in the world, I'm talking about like in the US or something like that.
Everybody else Pagandu doesn't know of anything like this, right, where it's not really a marketplace, it's not really an online digital, online-only retailer. It's actually an e-shopping centre.
Yeah.
And the good thing about our business and Homemaker Central is that we can take that model, build it out here, get it firing and put it into other markets.
Do you have gift cards?
We got coupons.
So can have a Homemaker's – I can go and buy for Jess a Homemaker Central – coupon gift card.
Yeah.
Give it to a
group. We're actually introducing proper gift cards shortly, right? But we got coupons and things. Okay. What we're going to do with the coupons, if you remember in the old days, they used to have these coupon books that you used to, and used to have all these savings and all that. We're going to be introducing something like that.
It's a way of saving for Christmas presents or whatever.
Yeah. And it's a way where you can, depending on what you're interested in, you can get, hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of discounts and special offers just for you because you're a classic member. We've got a membership program as well, and we're going to roll out a higher level one shortly. There's a lot going on. It's really exciting stuff, right?
Yeah,
it's really
cool. Yeah.
And the idea is for you being part of that Homemaker Central community and as a classic member, you get all these special offers and special discounts just for you, right? And it costs you nothing to be a member.
And just finally, but do your model, do you take a clip or do they rent a digital space? I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, at this point, we charge nothing for vendors to onboard, right? So we do all that at our expense. Yep. That may not remain the case in the future because it's obviously a costly experience. It excites to get them on board. There's no ongoing subscription fees or any fixed costs for retailers, right? So there's actually no risk. And in this market right now, we said about things being a bit tough, it's the best thing, right? Costing nothing to get on board. There's no fixed costs. You don't sell, you don't pay. Right. All we do is we charge a commission on the sale.
Right. So it's
success based.
It's like consignment.
Well, I suppose it is almost, isn't it?
So you're going back to the very.
It's a success based model.
Yeah. So you've gone back to the very beginning, but it's now digital. You're basically doing what you do when you're 17 years of age. You're now effectively they're consigning to your digital website or your website.
Well, it's their store.
Their products. Yeah.
It's their store. It's just another location for them, and they don't pay any rent.
But they're consigning their store to you.
In a sense, I suppose.
And you're just saying, pay me commission on whatever you sell.
Yeah, and if you don't sell, it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, and I'm prepared to back myself and take the risk.
Yeah.
Which is what you did when you were 17. Bill Gramos, good luck to you, mate.
Thank you very much, Mark. Love to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Mentor with Mark Boris. Audio and production is by Jessica Smalley. Production assistance, Simon McDermott. This is a Mentored podcast.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.